Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 433, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Allish. I'm joined today by Matt Ancio from MonarchyIT.com. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Good. I want to welcome you to the show and just thank you for coming on and, you know, being willing to sharing with the audience what you do in your day-to-day business.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
No problem. Why don't you go ahead and start us off with how you basically got started in computer repair, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Sure thing. It's kind of a long-winded story, so I'll make sure it's as quick as possible for anybody who's listening right now. You know, I'm under 30 right now. I know I'm getting up there, but going to hold on as long as I can.
Okay.
Which basically means that I grew up with some kind of electronic at every point or every stage of my life, since it, you know, the big changes have taken place within that time period, right, so to speak. The earliest I can remember being involved with computer repair of any kind was when I was 7 or 8, and my grandparents had gotten Windows 95 on their computers.
Okay.
And they were having problems. You know, everybody used AOL back then. So they were having problems connecting to the internet. Their phone line was, you know, 2-bit was being used, or it wasn't dialing out, so to speak. So they couldn't connect. And I was able to find that you could actually dial other numbers that were available from AOL's internal service in case your home landline wasn't working to connect.
Nice.
So I was troubleshooting, you know, it, you know, basically from the womb.
Right.
from that point on, I was never really like too interested in computer repair. It wasn't like something I just spent all my time doing, but when a printer broke at home, I'm the oldest of 7, so it's not like my dad was ever going to buy something twice.
Gotcha.
So since I was the oldest, he made me fix it, whether or not I was the one who broke it or not, unfortunately for me. But you know, I did that. I grew up with a lot of friends in Southern California. I'm born and raised Orange County, California. I grew up with a lot of friends who were interested in computers, be they Mac or Windows. So I did get a lot of knowledge per se through being friends with them and watching what they did. And when we got to high school, covering up their tracks for the, for the things that they were doing that the school library did not appreciate, like shutting down student access during lunch.
Oh gosh.
So,
normal kid things, right?
Right. Exactly. So, there was always that like natural talent. And there was always that ability. There just wasn't, I was more interested in sports growing up. There wasn't that like, oh, this is what I'm going to do, like super focused on it as like a career path, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But once I got into college, I took a job at a big box store. Not the one that we all like to talk about, but a competitor of theirs, in store as a technician. Since I had a little bit of an experience, I did really well in the job. And learned a lot process-wise and exactly what to do in certain scenarios. So I'm definitely grateful for that experience. But out of that, I kind of ran into the typical big corporate world environment that I wasn't a big fan of. So after I had that experience at the big box store, and to be honest, they decided that they weren't going to pay me more for doing well for them. So I left that, did a couple of other side projects before I got my own company off the ground. And that's where we're at today, a few years later.
Very cool. Well, we've got some, you know, got some similarities there. I was actually born in San Bernardino. Yeah, moved to Michigan when I was like 4. Not me myself, but my parents. And right. So I've been in Michigan ever since.
That would have been pretty cool if you did move by yourself at 4.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a great story. So, yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of curiosity. And I think that's how we all kind of start off. We start off with this curiosity about how things work, and we start to figure out how to fix them. And it's just kind of, a lot of times it starts off as a hobby. And then we go, okay, let's do something with this. And, you know, I'm getting really good at it and I'm learning a lot and I can take this to a customer and actually have them pay me for doing a service. And I think that's a typical story of how most of us get started. So at the big box store, you said your experience was good there. Now, you learned a lot of, and now let's preface this, but you learned a lot of good habits on what to do in your business nowadays, or did you learn also some bad habits at the same time?
Definitely more bad. I mean, I didn't learn the bad ones. I knew the bad ones when they happened or when they were telling us to do it.
Sure.
So I didn't. What I mean is like how to structure a virus removal, how to structure a PC tune-up, tools that, you know, a 21-year-old kid maybe doesn't have access to exactly that you could use in your own business setup, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Sure.
I liked the people that I worked with. There was a great incentive structure. And because my probably best trait as a business owner is people skills. So I was very, very good at that in the big box store. So I benefited greatly through their incentive program.
Sure.
They changed the incentive program that basically took away all of the benefit of my hard work. So at that point, my wife and I just got news that we were expecting our first son. And I said, yeah, no way can I support a family on what I'm making. So I went out on my own.
Okay. No, that's great. So yeah, I think everything that we do in our lives, especially when it comes to this work is a learning experience. And, you know, I think you can learn from every experience in life that we all do. So that's kind of cool. So now take us into your business. What types of things did you start off doing in your business, or did you just kind of go and run with everything and start supporting everyone? And do you residential business, you know, how's your business structured?
So when I started my business, I was still in college, UCI, shout out to everybody there, University of California, Irvine, proud anteater here. I was in school still. I was just a DBA doing residential work. Once I graduated, I moved into business support, changed my structure from just an hourly rate or a flat rate for residential clients to a full service MSP. From the contacts I had made in the tech field that I had worked with, I was able to expand my services that I could offer a full-fledged MSP offering to both residential and business clients. And that's where we're currently at.
Okay, great. And so now you've said, now when you went to the business clients, you started doing a more of an hourly rate versus the flat rate that you were using for residential. How are you treating residential still today? Are you still doing a flat rate or are you doing a combination of both?
Flat rate.
Okay.
I've always done flat rate for residential.
Okay.
Businesses I started off as is hourly. I'll be honest, because I didn't feel confident enough when I was just beginning to give them a full-fledged, you know, MSP offering. But at this point, with several years of experience, I have changed that model pretty quickly.
Now, when you say MSP, you know, and this is something we often talk about on a lot of these shows, is what is it you consider doing as an MSP? I mean, what do you provide to your business customers?
For me, it's 24/7, 365 remote maintenance monitoring of their devices, whether they be servers, PCs, printers, VoIP telephone setups, their networks. We do offer a website design, maintenance, and monitoring services as well. So any service that I'm offering, and this isn't even in the IT industry, as long as it's an external party, that would be me managing that service or making sure that it's working. For me, that's what makes a managed service. I did listen to your last podcast about this one. So for me, I know you guys all took a shot at defining it, but for me, pretty simply, it's just if you're a company and you're paying a third party to manage something of yours and it's a service agreement, you are in partnership with an MSP or a managed service provider. So that's what I do as an MSP to my clients. I am their provider of IT services.
No, I think that's a perfect definition of what MSP is, because you're right. That's basically what it is you're monitoring their services and equipment, you know, 365 days a year. So, yeah, that's a great definition. So Now with your residential stuff, now do you find your business in residential? What would you say percentages wise? Do you have mostly residential, or you know, some business, or mostly business, some residential, or has that changed over time as you you've grown your business?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, when I started off, it was just residential. Right now, it's about, I don't know, 5-10% maybe residential. It's mostly business clients now. But I still like having a good base of residential clients. I still like, believe it or not, I still like going out there and knocking on some doors when I have half an hour or an hour free in between appointments with clients or meetings with clients, just because I like that feeling of being humbled. I think any of us that have had some success should always look for opportunities to not necessarily be put in our place, but always have that experience of we're not the biggest deal in the neighborhood. So whether it's a door getting slammed on my face or not so kind words being exchanged for offering my services, I feel it keeps me grounded and makes sure that even though I've had a good amount of relative success early on, that it's not something that I'm taking to my head.
Gotcha. No, that makes perfect sense. You know, one of the things that I have always said is that I will not give up on residential customers. You know, yes, there probably will become a shift, you know, as most businesses do have that shift, but I don't want to leave those people out there by themselves. You know, the residential people still need help. And yes, you need that balance of where you've got that regular income coming in from your business customers, but at the same time, I find it sometimes fun to actually support, you know, those residential customers too. So,
For me, I couldn't agree more. It's a lot of times for me, it's even more fun than a business environment setup that we're supporting. Just because, like I said, I'm a people person. So I come out this, and a part of the success that I've had is because I am a people person. I don't want to come off like I'm putting anyone in IT or the tech industry down. But a common stereotype is the lack of people skills in the technical world that we all inhabit. So with that, I love interacting with people, whether they be old, young, whatever their backgrounds are. That's what I like getting out and doing. So I'm very hands on, even though I don't know what that was about. I'm very hands on, regardless of what's going on in my business. I like to be as involved as possible. So when it comes to residential clients, I like getting out there. I like doing the services myself sometimes if they're in my local area. And I like just getting to know people. I like having that experience of just interacting with other people.
Wow, that's awesome. And now, with that being said, do you use a lot of remote support tools, you know, at this time? Do you do remote support, or, you know, is it pretty much you're going out all the time and like you said, knocking on doors?
No, it's almost 100% remote.
Okay.
I like I said, I get out there for a little bit of time and knock doors just to, you know, kind of remind myself of when I started, as well as getting out there and staying humble. I started this on a whim and a prayer when I was still in college, just knocking doors in my neighborhood that my wife and I were living in. So I do like that ability to return to where it all started and try and keep me grounded.
Right.
But right now it's, you know, 100%, about 95% remote work that we do for our business and residential clients.
Because that's definitely, I think, a lot of times, if you can absolutely do it, that's the way to go. Now, I must have a weird client base. Not that they're weird per se, just that I, you know, it seems like I get these weird computers that are just so gummed up, and I've got to sit there and put my thinking cap on, which actually for me, even though it's irritating, I actually like it, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. Totally.
I like to solve the problem. So now there are some times where I have to give up and I go, I can't solve that problem. I'm just going to, you know, nuke and pave, which I hate to do nowadays, but sometimes that's what you have to do. So,
yep. and more importantly, not even that you have to do it. Sometimes, as business owners, we have to be as cost efficient as possible.
Sure.
So if you're looking at, you know, 24, 48, 72, or even more hours into a virus removal, at what point is a wipe and reload just better?
Right.
For the customer and for you as a business owner. As an aside, Jeff, I think, a lot of people listening might be new to the computer business, whether they're doing straight repair, whether they're trying to expand into business support or an MSP like we are. I do like getting across the point that no matter what you might be doing now, you need to have a plan on how you're going to improve or get better or grow. There Yes. should always be something in place to where your processes are getting better, or you as a technician are getting more skilled, or the areas that you're supporting are expanding if you want to be an expanding provider, so that you're never caught in just a mindset of, I'm good, this is enough, I'll be okay. Now, if that's your mindset, perfect. I mean, you're obviously allowed to have that mindset, but I think a lot of the listeners to this podcast will be in that other boat that I've just described.
Yeah, No, you're not allowed to be in that other camp, but I know you're trying to be politically correct there, but the reality is, if you're not expanding your knowledge and making yourself better in a business, if you're not moving forward, you're basically moving backwards. There is no standing still. There is no maintaining. Life just does not work like that in anything we do. So, yeah, definitely have processes in place and things that you put together to make your business better, to make it a better, better business for your customers. And, you know, really it's like, what do the customers need? And as long as we're doing that and we're getting better at our processes and stuff like that, I mean, there's going to come a point where a lot of your processes and stuff will be set in place. But man, if somebody comes to me with something new and says, hey, have you tried this? You know, in just a short story, I had a couple of computers in here that, they were messed up and they basically were in a repair loop. And I actually had to pull out some old school tools that I haven't used in a long time. And some I've never used. And, I pulled out Ultimate Boot CD, and there was a couple of tools I was able to use on there to get me to a starting point where I could, get data back off these computers. And then I've used Hiram's Boot CD, which I've never used in my business whatsoever. And I found some pretty cool tools on there that actually helped me get to another point on another computer. So, I look at some of the things we do and I go, okay, why is this doing this? And how can I stop this from happening again? Or how can I learn so that I can deal with this problem quicker if I have something like this that comes in? Because here's what happens, and I'm sure you can tell me that this works for you too, is that a lot of times when you get one thing that's broken, you're going to get another one and another one and another, and they might not be right next to each other, but when you get that second one in, you'll be able to go, oh, I know exactly what to do. And you'll get out of the process of, wasting a bunch of time and just make it work. And that's kind of that's the whole process of learning and making yourself better so that you can, deal with it better the next time.
Absolutely. If you don't have some kind of document in place for your business where you log specifically for the weird issues that come across every now and again to us as technicians, the fixes to those issues that come up, you need to be doing that right now, yesterday, basically, so that you have them in place, as you just said. So when the next time it happens, it's not a 48-hour repair. It's not a call the day after to the customer saying sorry for not having it fixed because you promised it would be done in a day. Things like that.
Right.
Also, to those who might be listening and wondering where I'm coming from and why I'm so adamant about these things, we operate technician-wise, so physically on premise or physical presence through my technicians in four states: Southern California, all of New Mexico, a little bit of Texas, El Paso, and up in the greater Salt Lake City area in Utah. Even with all of that and the other things and obligations that I have obviously running the business, every month, at the end of the month, I set aside a day to do my end of month, where I literally go through all of the processes that are currently in place for my business and I check them off. And if something has come across in the last month and is better or will be better for the processes that we have in place, I'll change it right there. And that's what we're going to be doing from that point on. So again, no matter how big or how small you are, set aside time to make sure you are operating as efficiently as possible as a business so that you can grow or benefit from that.
That's awesome. And what tool do you use to actually document this stuff?
Just the processes?
Yes.
Okay. So our ticketing, or do you mean ticketing or do you mean?
No, I mean, as far as, so, because I use Microsoft's OneNote. and I've created a notebook. And what ends up happening is that if I come across these weird problems that I often do, I will take documentation and I will put it into OneNote so that I can go back. And if I have that same problem again, I can go, instead of searching on Google again, boom, I've got all the information right there, that type of thing.
Gotcha. Sorry for misunderstanding the question there. For me, it's a combination of Word and OneNote, like a OneNote notebook, like you just said.
Okay. I just started using OneNote probably late last year, and I love it. It does everything that I need to do. I love the tab folders and everything, and it's very easy to keep all my information to where I can get to it quickly. You know, you can do tabs like, you know, software fixes or, you know, media downloads or whatever. And so you can put links and whatever you want in there. So I don't have to sit there and how many times have you gone on Google and tried to fix something and you fixed it after searching for hours and hours and hours to find a fix? And then 6 months down the road, it happens again. And you go to look on Google and there's no way in the world you can find what you did last time. It's non-existent or it's just, you know, difficult to find. I've had that happen more times than I can shake a stick at.
Yeah, I wish I could understand what you're saying. That's never happened to me.
Wow. That's awesome. That's good because it's happened to me so many times where I go, I can't believe I cannot find where that information was that I found last time. I'll find, you know, similar information, but it's like I can never get that one. So that's why a lot of copy and pasting, a lot of, you know, making sure that, oh, hey, let me document this and here's exactly what I did to fix the problem.
Jeff, that was sarcasm. That's happened to me all the time.
I know. Oh. But no, you're bringing up a lot of good points, and it's very good for people to think about this stuff because, like I said, you know, when I started in this business, I started using 3x5 cards. That shows you how old I am. And I would actually write things out with a pencil or a pen. And I did that when I started off. And then there was a certain point I got in my business where I just wasn't documenting anything. And now I'm back to the point where I go, you know what? I can't remember all this stuff. I really have to document stuff and keep it straight because it can't all stay in my head because it'll get lost. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I still have post-it notes.
Okay.
My calendar for my day, while a lot of the important meetings are on my Outlook calendar, I actually have a day planner still. That I just like that feeling because I'm a little bit older than the generation that is in charge of technology right now. All you young guns out there, I still enjoy the paper to the pen feeling and doing it that way. But obviously, as I get older, as I start, you know, going into the sun, what is it? The sunshine of my life or sunlight of my life? What is that
saying? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Fair enough. I'm just making old jokes. I just turned 27, so I'm feeling the age set in.
Oh Lord, if you feel old at 27, what does that make me? Holy cow.
Anyway. funny story. I was in a client's office about a month ago now, and I came out of the meeting and there was somebody in the waiting room for this client's profession. And as I'm walking out, she grabs my attention and says, "Wow, you look a little bit old to be doing this." And I said, "Oh,
wow.
Okay. Well, I said, sorry. I didn't know what to say in that situation. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. How old do you think I am? Because at this point, you know, I just want to see how old she thinks I am.
Sure.
Because, you know, I mean, I might look a little bit older than 27, but I'm hoping for like a nice old lady to be nice to me. You know what I mean? without missing pace or with any like lack of seriousness, she looks me straight in the face, says, about 45. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm probably going to go home and cry in my room for 3 weeks, but thanks.
Wow.
Have a good day, man. By the way, here's my card in case your computer ever breaks at home.
Right. Wow.
I didn't know what to do in that situation. I was just so hurt. I didn't know old ladies could be so mean.
Well, you know how it is when you, as you're getting older, I think there's a certain age point where it is really hard to tell the age difference between people, you know, like from their, you know, late 20s to early 40s. I'm past that point now, so I don't care, but, you know, whatever.
Right, for sure. It was just such a weird experience, you know? You don't expect the nice old lady to tell you you're 20 years older than you actually are.
And that's young to be doing. To me, that's like, it's almost like the prime age, I would think, for, you know, what a lot of people are doing in this industry.
That's what threw me off. I didn't understand the beginning of her point. I didn't understand where she was coming from.
Oh, that's awesome. So, okay. So going back to your business. So what types of things are you working on do you have any other stories that you want to tell about, you know, things that you've come across in your business that, you know, maybe is a head scratcher or just an interesting story, stuff that you've been working on?
Yeah, the head scratcher that we had recently, we onboarded a client down here in Las Cruces, New Mexico, which is where we're based, since that's where I live. It's like the only benefit of being the owner. You get to decide where all the paperwork goes through.
Nice.
We onboarded a client, and they have to be compliant. They have some compliance mandatory from the state and from the feds, their line of business. And they were not compliant when I went in and pitched our services to them. So obviously we needed to onboard them and make them compliant during that process. One of those processes was getting them a separate guest wireless network so that they weren't sharing access to company info with guests that came in and connected to their Wi-Fi network and those computers and personal devices of their employees that were connecting to the same network. Which is obviously a big no-no.
Sure.
So when we did that, we got a Cisco router device in there. Now, what was bad or what was unfortunate was that a previous IT provider had actually set up their network along with one of those famous ISPs that we all love so much and all their great service. And they just
are you talking about Comcast?
Maybe.
Or Time Warner out where you're at.
Oh no, out where I am at, it's definitely Comcast.
Okay.
I didn't know if we could name them by name, but
Oh, I'm Comcastic here, so I'm great.
Fair enough. Same here. So anyway, I was really disappointed to see that, you know, they had let them, knowing what kind of business it was, basically in the dark. And open to fines and violations that, I don't know, could take them out of business.
Was the ISP, were they using their modem/router?
Yeah, it was just a modem, but they worked with a local provider.
Okay.
Here, another local IT support company to set up this client, and the IT support company installed a router that wasn't compliant. So I was pretty disappointed by that, but we got in and we did that. We installed a Cisco router business line, and we got it all set up and everything. And the problem we ran into was that the modem, I swear, Jeff, this thing was Ultron. whenever we applied settings to this router, the modem, once we plugged it in and got it all set up, the modem would fry it. It would scramble the routers, configuration.
Okay.
And just completely mess it up. So obviously this doesn't work because this client had two locations. So we obviously couldn't be spending all day trying to get this problem figured out. So we got it temporarily figured out with some interesting configurations on our end, but we knew that the issue was with the modem, and you know how those ISPs just love giving service same day and as quick as possible to their paying clients.
Right.
So there were some issues for about a week or two after the install that we got it working with just regular modem issues not being configured correctly to the router. And, you know, I would talk to them, or I'd even come on site sometimes and, you know, Band-Aid here, Band-Aid there, and just keep telling them, hey, you know, I have no problem doing this for you. I understand it's hard and that, you know, it's difficult for you guys to work through, but if you can get Comcast out here, or, you know, I would tell them what the problem was at that point and what I'm fixing so that, you know, they're good to go and that how it's related to the modem, to not save my own skin, but make sure they understood the process. I think a lot of what we do in IT, we talk a lot about not geek speaking to our clients and making it as easy to understand as possible.
Right.
I obviously agree with that. But I also think there's some hesitance sometimes when we're in those scenarios where we feel or we think that our business client especially might be breathing down our neck because things aren't working perfectly. When in reality, it's just something they don't understand. And the people that we deal with are usually owners or managers of business and businesses, and they're not used to not understanding things. They're the people in charge. They're the smartest people in the room. So when we're in those situations, we need to not be fearful and not be afraid to break things down with them, even on a technical side, so that they understand it. Because that way they're reassured. They know that no one's pulling the wool over their eyes or taking them to the bank.
Right.
That's an aside. But what happened was Comcast finally came out and switched out their modem, and we literally had to guide the Comcast rep. Technician who was on site on how to put it into the bridge mode wasn't available. But we basically told it to be a bridge or turned off DHCP on it so that our router could just be the device and the modem was just acting as an out to the internet. And that's all it's currently doing.
Was that a business class modem from Comcast?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Yeah. Those are horrible.
They are pretty terrible. But it was even less encouraging that we had to guide the technician through all the things on his end that he needed to do so it could work with our device.
I went back from, I used to have, I've always had my own modem, my own router and all that kind of stuff. And there was a while where I was having a problem with my previous ISP and I basically had went back to their modem so that they were responsible if anything happened, because what's the number one thing people want to do is they want to blame the equipment if it's your own.
Right.
And it's hard, and they don't really believe you when you tell them, listen, I'm a technician. I deal with this stuff all the time. Here's what I've done. Here's what's going on. No, it's not here in the house or in the business. It's outside. It's in your line. It's down on your node or whatever. And I went back from, once I switched ISPs, and now I'm Comcastic, and I basically had went back to my own modem because I didn't, once all these ISPs went to this where they offered this free wireless wherever you could go, I was like, no, thank you. I'll just have my own, and I basically got the most expensive modem they had out there. I think it was $125, and it's just a dumb straight modem. All it does is take the signal through. I don't have to worry about bridging it or anything. Hook it up to a router and boom, done. So I don't have to worry about bridge mode and all that other stuff, because here's what the problem is. A lot of these firmwares that Comcast or different ISPs are using, number one, if they update them, they update them mostly for their benefit. And so they'll take a lot of things out of it. I actually had a rep tell me that I needed to get inside the modem to turn it into bridge mode, and they wouldn't give me the credentials to get in. I finally said,
wow.
I am renting this from you. It is basically leased equipment to me to use. And I said, the way it's configured right now, I cannot use it. So somebody needs a change of policy right now. And I was nice about it. I wasn't as snarky as I am right now, but I said, I need the password to get in there. And she finally gave it to me. And I'm like going, are you serious? I'm like, so this is the same password that's on everybody's system? Well, yes, sir, but you got to be directly connected to the modem in order to do it. I said, really? So I grabbed my tablet. I said, that's funny. I said, I just logged in your modem on my wireless tablet. don't tell me.
this could go on forever. I mean, as a primarily business provider, business service provider, I deal with ISPs almost every day. And their technicians, or I used air quotes there.
Yes.
To get some things resolved. Big tip to you guys out there, when you're dealing with these ISPs, whether it's yourself or with business class providing services, just one, always ask for the level 3 techs. Those are usually the highest techs.
Yep.
Not because they'll be able to help you faster or know more, which they're supposed to, but What it does is that it allows you as techs, we know what needs to be done on their end, and we can just tell them. And level three techs are much more open to being told what to do on their end to get things working, because they're not. I think there's got to be some incentive involved in the ISP companies having calls resolved at the level one level. I'm sure there is. But for whatever reason, I've found that if I just go straight to level three techs, if I just tell them what I need done, most of the time they know that they're talking to somebody who knows what they're talking about, and they'll just do it because they don't want to be stuck on the phone with me all day, because I'm pretty pleasant now on the phone, but I can be not pleasant sometimes. So,
yeah, number one thing is I absolutely am not unplugging it and plugging it back in, because I've already done that 15 times before I called you. So that's not happening.
Right.
Next.
Yeah.
Now, in the business class modems, and I don't know, do you have to use their modem, or can you actually buy an off-the-shelf modem?
I'm not too sure. Okay. I just like having their equipment in place, because I can't. Even if I put in my modem, I still can't guarantee the service.
Sure.
Because it's not my service, right? It's just my piece of equipment.
Right.
And I don't want to be liable for that. So I grit my teeth and use their equipment.
Okay. Yes. And you know, the other thing too, is a lot of times is if you've ever gone out, I'll put this out there. If you've ever gone into a business or even a residential home and you see that they have a modem from like 1995, you know, you just tell them that they basically, or you can do it for them, call Comcast or whomever their ISP is, and basically let them know that they need to get out there as soon as possible and replace the modem, slash router immediately, because they won't do it unless you're having problems. And I can't believe how many people actually will sit there and they go, my wireless is bad. I can't get, I live in a small apartment and I can't get a wireless signal from my bedroom to my living room. And you're like, what? You're talking like less than 20 feet. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
What?
Live with this? You allow yourself,
yes,
to live in this world?
And people do all the time. So, help your customer out when you see that and you go, no, you need to, if you want me to call them, I'll call them. But somebody needs to call them and have them replace this equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. For me, I think there's a big, especially with, maybe elderly clients or senior clients or middle-aged clients that aren't tech inclined. I think there's a big ethical and moral stance as technicians that we need to take when we're servicing these kind of clients as well, because they're in the dark. So whether or not you're going to benefit as financially as if they paid for all the services possible for you to do, if you walk in and you know that their network is insecure, obviously offer to secure it for them, charge them a fee. But don't hide that from them.
Sure.
Don't tell them that it's not secure, or don't tell them that it's not secure. We need to make sure that, for me, Jeff, I think technicians are a noble profession. So we all know noble professions historically have been those of doctors, lawyers, engineers, the clergy, etc. And they also, besides the clergy, tend to make the most money in society. I think as a subset of engineering, technicians belong to that class of professions. We're the front line, basically, when it comes to helping people who don't understand technology understand it, or help them better understand it in their lives and how it can help them, because it's constantly changing and it's what we take pride in doing. So I kind of take it to another level there. And I agree with you, but I also I like to elevate that, and I like to see technicians do that as well, to where they understand where we sit. I know that there's a lot of negative perception of technicians because of the bad experience people have when they go in and see some guy who can log on to Facebook. So he's the technician at the local big box store or what they see on the news or what it might be. But I really think that technicians have a very important role in society. I don't mean to get too deep or over-meaning here, but I would just like, as a profession and as professionals, if we took ownership of that more, if we looked at ourselves not as just the local guy down the street fixing viruses, but as somebody who's actually bridging that gap from technological understanding between people who get it and people who don't. so that we're able to help those people. And obviously we benefit through having, making a great living, but also so that we don't get caught up in this bad stigma that people have. Oh, you, so you sit on your computer all day? Oh, you're surfing the web, you're on ESPN while you're doing something with the computers. What do you even do? I fixed a computer before. Do you ever get that where people just don't understand what you're doing or what you do, and they just like, oh, you remove viruses all day? Oh, that must be really intense. And they give you that roll of the eyes, like you don't do anything important.
Right. No, yeah, that's I'm glad you brought that up, because that is an excellent point. And I think a lot of people, there's a lot of techs have been in this business for a long time, and they feel like they're walked on all the time. Now, here's how I solved that problem. What I did, number one, was I raised my prices. Number two is I don't take every job that comes at me. You know why? Because I don't have to. So I make the decision on who I'm going to work with. As soon as I figure out that it's going to be a problem with that customer, I might not call them back or whatever. And because it's important to me, like I tell people all the time, I'm your local IT support, and I want to have a relationship, between you and me, and that I'm working on your stuff and I'm looking out for your best interests. If you don't trust that I'm looking out for your best interests and I'm just trying to make a buck, then we don't have the right type of relationship that I want. So I'm going to move on, and you can go get somebody else. It's going to be cheaper and take care of you, every once in a blue moon when you really mess your computer up. Or you can have somebody that's going to be there looking out for you when things are coming down the road and, things are happening out there, whether it be, Microsoft scammers calling or, putting things on your computer to protect you, those types of things. And I think that's where you put it great, because I've never thought about it as a noble profession. But now that you say that, that's absolutely how I feel, but it's just not always portrayed from the customers.
Yeah, absolutely. So can we dive into this a little bit?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Because this is a subject I'm really passionate about as a business owner and as an IT business owner. Guys, like those of you who are listening right now and are listening to me and Jeff talk about how, we don't need to take them. We don't need to deal with those guys. And you're thinking to yourself, I would love to be in that position, but I'm just starting out. It's a chance to make a buck. It might not be the full service price that I would like, but I'm getting it now. Yeah, they might be a little bit difficult to deal with, but I need to take it, right? I need to get by. I'm going to try not to get emotional here, Jeff. Guys,
go for it.
Guys, when I started this, I was a broke college kid. Okay? I was a broke college kid with no money. I had a wife and a baby on the way. And I didn't know what I was going to do, but I felt passionate and I felt driven that this was the line or the path, so to speak, that I should take. And I can tell you, when I would knock doors from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. in Garden Grove, California, shout out, looking for clients, it stunk. It was not fun. But all it takes, guys, is hard work. There's nothing special about me, so to speak, that I did something groundbreaking or so special that I got all of these clients or I have a certain amount of success. I'm obviously not Google yet or anything crazy like that. but I want you guys to know that all it takes is hard work, sticking to it, making sure you don't compromise your integrity just so you can make a $50 virus removal when you really want to be making 100 or 150 on that service, but you need it to pay a bill. I know exactly where you guys are coming from or what you guys are feeling right now when you're starting your business, because I've been there. I've done that. I cannot emphasize to you guys enough to stick to what price-wise you want to charge or what you feel you should be making for each service, and to also not get down. I think Jeff would agree with me that success doesn't happen overnight. And if it does, it's very rare.
Exactly.
It takes, as entrepreneurs, this is also, Jeff, as you were talking about feeling like it's a noble profession to be a technician, being an entrepreneur is noble in and of itself.
Absolutely.
You have to have basically rhinoceros skin to be an entrepreneur. You have to be able to get through the unbearable as you get everything laid out and put the hard work in. I'm not saying that my life is easy now. I do hard work every single day. It doesn't get less easy. It gets more hard as you grow and as you get more successful. You've got a lot more on your plate and a lot more to take care of. But as you grow, you learn how to take care of those things. So for those of you who are listening and, you know, you're laughing along to me and Jeff talking about how you don't need to take those kind of clients, or you don't need to lower your prices, and are saying to yourselves, yeah, I'd love to be in that shoe, in those shoes, but I need to do it to pay bills. You don't. Work hard, and the clients that you want are out there, and they'll come to you if you stick to your principles and you stick to what you want to be as a technician.
You know, here's one of the things. Experience is a great teacher as long as it's someone else's experience. And so here's the reality. Okay, you can go out and do the same things we all have done and, you know, beat our heads against the wall, you know, lowered our prices, done all these things to make money in this business. And you know what? Maybe when you're starting out, you know, maybe that's how you start out and you learn and you get a lot more jobs that way. But you're going to get to a point where you go, I don't feel like working for this much money, so I would like to make more. And that's when you start to be selective. But you've got to look at your, you know, like Matt's saying, you've got to look at your worth. And what is your time worth? You know, when I first started figuring out that my time, basically when I started in this business, was worth like $5 an hour, I was like, okay, no, this is not going to work. I can't. I would rather, for $5 an hour, I would go on my computer and play a video game versus working on this stuff. That's where my thought process went. So you really got to look and see what you feel you're worth. And you don't want to gouge the customer. You're still, again, we're in the business to take care of the customers. But at the same time, what they're going to do is they're going to give you money for taking care of them, and that's okay. And you've got to be okay with that. So, and I understand different areas, there's going to be different prices for different things. And that's, you just got to look at what's in your area. Don't base it on what people are charging in Craigslist necessarily.
No,
you know,
never.
It's
never.
Like, look
just,
at your,
just don't use it, guys.
Yeah.
Just don't use it. I know the allure is there. I myself, I was even on Craigslist. So that's not, I'm not saying it because I don't want you to use something that I used or one of my secrets. Just, it's just not worth your time.
Or, you know, and I've said this before, and there are a couple people who have actually used Craigslist properly. And yep. What they do is they go on there and they might put it maybe a little video blurb on there or something, or, you know, a link to a video for them, or, but they'll charge accordingly. They'll charge a good rate, not a cheap rate. So, you know, because Craigslist is a weird thing. It's one of those things where, believe it or not, there's a lot of real estate that's sold on Craigslist. And yeah, it's just because people are always looking for some sort of deal. And I think a lot of times when they go to Craigslist, even if they're paying a lot of money for something, but they believe it's a good deal, they'll still use it. And for some reason, it's kind of like a newspaper. People will go on Craigslist every single day. I don't understand it. I gave Craigslist up years ago, but some people still every day will look on there for just things.
I recently gave it up. I like to think that I was using it correctly, but
okay.
I recently gave it up this year. So, I mean, I get where you guys might be coming from, but for me, Jeff, like my conversion rate knocking on doors or canvassing businesses is probably one for every 2 to 3 hours. And that's good enough, especially big businesses.
Absolutely.
That I don't need to be going out and doing that. And again, guys, it's not because I'm something special when I get in there and pitch my services, but it's because I put in the work. So if you were to do that, I guarantee your, I don't know if I guarantee it, but I would not be surprised if your rate of success was equal to or better than mine.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times, like I think you've hit it on the head, Matt, is that most of the time it's, you know what, just doing the work, and sometimes the work of knocking on doors, talking to people in businesses, that is key to getting in there. And you know what? The reality is you're going to get more no's than you are yeses, but if you don't go at all, you'll never get any yeses.
Exactly.
So anyways, now that we went down that rabbit trail, that was good stuff. That was good stuff, because I think it's important for people to know out there. And again, there's many different ways to do business, and hopefully some of the nuggets that you get out of this will help you in how you think about your business. And I think for a lot of people, they don't understand this, and I always encourage people to read business books and different things, but a lot of times your business is really more mental than it is physical. Like you get to learn how to do something, and yeah, you're using your brain to fix problems and different things like that, but really it's how you perceive yourself, it's how you perceive your business, it's how you perceive your customer is really what helps your business grow in the long run.
Right. So. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, if those listening take nothing else away from me being on here, it's that you should see yourself as part of the very privileged few who belong to a noble class of professionals. And if you come across people who don't have that same opinion of you, you probably shouldn't be taking them on as clients. But also, I'm not going to say it should bug you, but you should do whatever it takes on your end to make sure that's the persona you're giving out to those who might be potential clients of yours as well.
You know, I'm sorry, this just caught me. I'm looking at your website, and it's Monarchy IT, and you have a crown up there, and you're talking about noble professions. And when you first brought that word up, I just pictured myself in a knight's armor walking in to take care of somebody's computer. But anyways, I'm sorry, that just hit me. I was like, oh yeah, no, a noble profession. So you even portray that on your website.
I try to make my message a one message, just like one Microsoft. I try and keep it all together.
Is it really one Microsoft?
Just go with the analogy, okay. Jeff. Just go with it. I think they're getting there.
They are.
On another aside, I never understood, well, I understood some of the Microsoft hate, but I think that a lot of the tech industry now is a lot of people who actually aren't that techie. So that means that the tech industry is a lot more swayed by trends and what's in and what's out. When in reality, I think Microsoft has done not perfect, but just fine for me. The times that it's lost popularity.
Absolutely. I've been working with Microsoft since 98. So Windows 98 was my first actual, what I would call PC. Before that was TI-99s, Commodore 64s, stuff like that. So anyways, all right. So what are some of your favorite tools, software or hardware that you use in your business all the time?
I really like Malwarebytes.
Okay.
And I really like Hitman Pro.
Okay.
The reason why, and these are the two, well, I use TDSS Killer as well as Hijack This.
Okay.
But a lot of residential clients I have found like to know what's going on, especially since we're on-site business. We go to our clients in their homes or in their business offices 99.9% of the time. A lot of them like to know what's going on, not because they're trying to learn it so they can do it themselves next time and not have to pay you, but just because, like going back to what I said previously, they don't know and they want to know, or they want to at least think that they know what's being done. And those interfaces for Malwarebytes and for Hitman Pro, and to a lesser extent, TDSS Killer and Hijack This, allow me to involve a client with understanding what I'm checking and what I'm doing with this specific program on their computer, where I think a lot of other software is not as great GUI-wise for end user interaction or understanding.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with it. Yeah, those are definitely ones that are easy to understand. They've come a long way, but yeah, they definitely, you can look at them and know what it's doing. And, you know, basically if there's bad things on it, it'll let you know. And then it'll tell you, what do you want to do with it? And you click a button and you're on your way. So.
Yeah. I don't just use them because they're easy for their clients to understand. Obviously they're great tools.
Sure.
But that it just makes it that much easier to use them as my primary tools.
Absolutely. Now, do you work on hardware, you know, laptops, you know, taking apart desktops, different things like that?
Yeah, we'll switch out hard drives, RAM. We'll do not motherboard. We'll do screen replacements, DC jack repairs, the basic ones. I would think we could all agree right now in computer repair that the hot services are virus removal, DC jack repair, and then screen replacement. If you aren't offering those services, you should be. And if you don't know how to do one of those services, make a partnership with somebody who does or learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because those are still the heavy hitters. Now, the DC jack repairs are kind of nice nowadays because a lot of them are just basically they plug into a daughter board, or you can actually get some of them are even where you can buy the daughter board, you know, fairly cheap and inexpensive to replace those. You know, the days of every once in a blue moon, I still have to do a soldering power jack repair, but it's very rare nowadays.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have any hardware tools that you do use in your business for, you know, like managing networks or anything like that? Anything that's that you can think of?
I like Spiceworks.
Okay.
They have a network monitoring tool that I'm fond of. It's free. I don't want people to get the wrong impression. I just like the tool. I mean, it obviously is great that it happens to be a free tool. But through other things that I use, I don't have a problem, you know, paying for good stuff. I obviously want to be using the best tools available at all times, but I like their tools, their tool for network monitoring. If you mean like actual hardware equipment, for networks and that kind of thing, I like using Cisco products.
Okay.
Be they VoIP phones or, you know, their line of switches and routers, et cetera.
Now you're using obviously managed routers and stuff when you're, you know, on business, you know, in a business contract, right?
Right.
Okay. And you like the Cisco. So are they fairly easy to use and understand? If somebody was going into a business and they saw, you know, the $50 off the shelf Linksys router and said, should that really be there?
Right.
Would you say that, you know, the managed router, are they fairly easy to understand and work on?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, because we're technicians and it's what we do. And if we don't know how to use it 100%, we'll probably just study on it for a little bit and be able to get up to basic functionality. No, in the case that it's not going to be one click and you're done with everything. Which I think is good. Obviously, it protects us having jobs.
Absolutely.
But no, for what it is, yeah, I believe it's about as simple or easy to use or easy to manage as you can get.
Okay. Yeah, I've always had a rule of thumb. I usually buy, you know, higher end routers for my, you know, my house here, mostly because, you know, I have a lot of computers and a lot of my kids and myself like the game, and so I like to open up the ports and stuff like that and still manage that stuff from that standpoint. So yeah, definitely, you know, I think there's a lot of things that people can do in their own homes. You know, there's a lot of times where people have said, well, you know, what remote support software do you use? And I'll tell them, but at the same time, I tell people, hey, there's trials out there for a lot of these. I said, so exactly. Go get yourself a trial. I said, you probably have a couple computers in your house, so you can load up the software on the one and then just log into the other one and play around with it. See if you like it. There's a lot of things you can do right in your house to learn that you don't necessarily need to learn on a customer's computer, because I don't know how many times, just being honest, how many times I've done this where the first time I'm working on something on a customer's, you know, computer, and at this time, they just happen to be looking over my shoulder, and I'm like going, I mean, I'm boffing it, man. I'm just, it's a mess. It's like, oh my gosh, I look like I don't even know what I'm doing. What am I doing here? And so a lot of times you can learn in your own house, on your own network, and so that you don't look like a buffoon when you're sitting in front of your customers.
Exactly. I also, going on this, I take it the other way as a sign when someone wants to know all this information about what I do. I have no problem sharing the basics. But if you're wanting to be on your own and do things yourself and you can't put in the time to test the tools that are available for you to use in your business, like you said, through these free trials, I'm not too sure that an entrepreneurial life is the life for you, because that's all it is. From what I'm used to,
right.
It's just constant work, constant strive to have the best products in place for your clients. And if you don't want to put your head to the grindstone, so to speak, it might not be fun working for somebody else, but I don't know if you're going to be set up for working on your own.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things, and don't think that you have to do everything all at one time. You know, pick and choose. Okay, what am I going to learn, you know, this week, or what am I going to learn this month? And you can take these things in stride. And, you know, a lot of it, let's be honest, a lot of this is just going to come from the experience of doing it, of messing it up, of, you know, going, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just did that. Of, you know, spending six hours at a client's, you know, updating, you know, Vista Service Pack 2 because you didn't realize that there's remote support software out there that you could actually went back to your office or your home and remote it in and finish that install up. You know, things like that. So, yeah, most definitely. And I think we've really kind of talked, I mean, we've talked about, you know, some business tips, you know, we've talked about favorite tools, software, hardware, you know, kind of some of the stuff you've been working on. I think we've covered a lot of good stuff today, and hopefully this will help the audience out into, you know, getting that mindset around what computer repair is. And you brought it up. It's so perfect. Something I've never thought of, but that's what I'm going to start saying from now on. I'm going to take it from you, Matt. This is a noble profession, and that's the way I'm going to think about myself from now on. So, I appreciate you coming out and sharing with us today about, you know, what you do in your business, and you're more than welcome to come back anytime you want to share something else. But what's probably the best way if people want to get in contact with you, and you know, what's probably the best way to do that?
Well, thanks, Jeff, first for allowing me to come on. It's been a real honor. People can get a hold of me at matt2t@monarchyit.com. Can I do a shout out?
Sure, absolutely.
Shout out to my techs, Sam, Israel, Dylan up in Salt Lake City. Anybody in Albuquerque listening, we are hiring in that area right now. Feel free to send me a resume at the email I just gave you. Melissa, my wife, and Caleb, my son.
Nice. Awesome. Well, I definitely appreciate you taking the time away from your family and obviously your business, and, you know, just like I said, sharing with us, because it's been awesome. I've learned some great things, and you know, I'm going to change my mindset even a little bit more.
Sure. Well, again, I'm very thankful for the opportunity, and this wasn't a hassle or anything like that. I'm a very big fan of the Podnets Network, and for everything I've learned through you guys. So this is more giving back than anything else, and saying thank you for what I've gotten from it.
Very cool. Well, you guys can also find me on the Google+ at Jeffrey Hellish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on this show, like Matt was, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you guys want to leave a voicemail, you can call 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. If you guys could do us a favor, leave us a rating and review on iTunes. That lets more people know about us. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.